Welcome back to Signal Fire Radio, a show about ambitious leadership for ambitious leaders. Our guest today is Sam Blunt, photographer, historian, free diver, and Marine Corps veteran. Don't go anywhere. We have an awesome show coming up for you.
Signal Fire Radio.
So now you know exactly what it feels like to be an obstacle. I held my way, you won't remain. You won't remain.
Welcome back to Signal Fire Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Matt, do you want to explain yourself? You've known our guest, Sam, for an awful long time, and you've been saying his name wrong the entire time.
Well, we have to preface it. I haven't known him for an awful long time.
How long have you guys known each other for, Sam?
I don't know, three, 4 years.
Okay, all right. Well, that's long enough to know to know if his last name is pronounced Blount versus Blunt.
Blount. It's spelled B-L-O-U-N-T, and it wasn't until we just did an intro and you introduced him and then we had to re-record it because Sam's like, dude, that's not my last name. My last name's Blunt.
Blunt. He did it. It was cool the way he did it. He was like, hey, guys, cut.
He said, put some respect on it.
Put some respect on my name. We're going to talk about some cool stuff with Sam today. Specifically, we're going to talk about what it's like to free dive with Matt. I think that's an important subject that everybody wants to hear about. Leaving a legacy and then finding peace through photography. So, Sam, if you would just sort of introduce yourself, kind of your background, and maybe start around the time that you got in the military up to here.
All right. So joined the Marines in 2010, knocked out my 4 years. And then when I got out, started going to school for a little bit. Kind of didn't enjoy school as much as I thought I was going to, so I decided to drop out and start a business to get that same quality of experience. So I started Frontline Freediving, which is my freediving spearfishing shop here in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Amazing merch there, right? I mean, great T-shirts.
Yeah,
I see you show up on them all the time. I'm like, dude, I need to get one of those.
The silkies.
Yeah. Oh, the silkies. Sorry, Sam. I didn't mean to interrupt
you. Got tons of silkies if you want. so used that to travel a bit and went to Costa Rica and, kind of all over the world. Ended up closing Frontline down last year and went to South Africa, got stuck there for a few months and then sailed across the Atlantic back to here.
Which that story.
Just can't skip over stuff like that.
No,
like,
that story is.
We'll
freaking
let you intro it and then we're going to get deep into those stories because.
And on that trip, so 4 years ago, we had a buddy pass away on a scuba diving accident. And so we had gotten together and all tried to raise money and sink a ship for him. So that actually ended up sinking last summer. Unfortunately, I was stuck in the middle of the Atlantic because COVID got me stuck in Africa for 3 months. Since then, I've started, moved into the software space. And so I'm doing sales for a software startup.
Like a SaaS software company? Evan.
Right on, man.
You guys are two sassy software sales guys.
Super sassy.
Yeah, so it's called Upsell. If any of you guys own software companies.
Plug right into the camera, Upsell.
Shout out.
Evan, who are you working for now?
Mosaic.
Mosaic? Are you guys competitors or?
No, we're financial techs.
Okay.
Funny enough, I'm prospecting your company.
Mosaic Tech? Yeah. Oh, I can put in a good word.
Excellent.
So what happened with South Africa? So you were over there, you were just over there traveling and then.
So I guess last November, a guy who I had spoken with on Instagram, we followed each other, he posted a map of the trip they were going to do from Durban, South Africa, around the Cape and across the Caribbean. I just posted on there, hey, man, that's a dream trip of mine, and he invited me. So we met briefly at a coffee shop. A couple weeks later, I flew to South Africa on March 17th. Was like the only non-South African flying into the country and got locked in their house for 3 months.
Yeah, because it was like 6 days later. I think it was the 23rd of March or something that things started happening here.
Yeah. The world shut
down. Dude, you got to have a lot of trust to go from a cup of coffee to like, yeah, I'll go to South Africa with you.
Well, I mean, yes, man. When it comes
to travel, Were you guys, were you guys just vibing or?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we just met on Instagram.
We all met on LinkedIn, so it's
true.
Yeah, it's super normal for diving people to meet on. Yeah. So I flew over there and then spent 3 months in a house with his parents, him and his girlfriend. Couldn't leave. If you were outside, 3 months in jail.
I don't know
what. No court date, no questions.
Seriously?
Straight to jail. Yeah.
They brought back the camouflage helmets and just beating heads in for being outdoors.
Was there any contentious points of you living there with him and his girlfriend and his parents like for 3 months?
No.
Did you guys become friends or mortal enemies?
No, it ended up being actually great. Well, we spent another 2 months, sailing across the Atlantic together, so. No, his parents were amazing. Like, they took me in for 3 months when, you know, I just showed up on their doorstep. Didn't know any of them. No, they're fantastic people. So
did you get to do the dream trip that you had set out to do?
Yep.
It just got delayed by 90 days.
So, yep. After, you know, finally
it gets better.
Yeah.
It gets better.
Yeah. I want to hear the whole thing.
They lifted lockdown to like a reasonable level. And so this 27-year-old captain, it was his second time crossing the Atlantic, but he speaks Zulu fluently. And somehow he got us out of South Africa. We were the first private boat allowed to leave a dock in the country.
Wow.
And so we leave, you know, didn't really have time to do a sea trial, right? Because we're just trying to get out of the country. Funny enough, the fastest way for me to get home was to sail across the Atlantic. I think at the time, the State Department had gotten like 40 people out of the country, 40 Americans out.
Wow.
Dude, that's rad.
And so, you know, we leave Durban and we're headed down to Cape Town, got like perfect weather, but they had forgotten the entire return system for the second rudder on the hydraulics. So we only had one rudder the whole
time.
Like
just left it on the dock or?
I don't know. Just didn't install it.
Didn't do a pre-transatlantic voyage safety check to
checklist. We're headed down to Cape Town, you know, notorious, like going around the Cape there is like some of the worst seas in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately we had, I mean, couldn't have been better weather. It was like 2 foot chop coming around. We went around Cape Agulhas at midnight. It was awesome. Lighthouse was going. Then we went around up to Cape Town, spent 4 days there trying to fix everything that was wrong. We left Cape Town, I think the next day, they reclosed the border.
Oh, wow.
And so we would have been stuck in Cape Town for, you know, another 2 months or something. I can't remember what it was. But being in Cape Town as, like, the only tourist in the whole, you know, city was incredible. So we left Cape Town and started heading to St. Helena. So that was about 2 weeks, just great conditions. I got real into bird photography, which we'll probably talk about later.
Yeah.
You know, the whole reason I went on the trip, I'm a big history guy, so I really wanted to go to St. Helena. So we get there, and they would not let us on the island. They had a two-week quarantine process, but for some reason they still wouldn't let us because we had to sit there for 2 weeks and not be at sea for 2 weeks. So after a few days, we ended up just going for a dive, swimming around. We found a shipwreck right off the coast there, and then we ended up heading on from St. Helena. So my little brother's wedding was October 8th, and when I left for South Africa, I had to be at his wedding. I had 5 months to make it to his wedding. Right, so now I'm 3 months locked in a house, and then a 2 month trip across the Atlantic.
And they weren't going to push the wedding back on account of you being there, right?
Okay. Well, and I'm the best man.
Yeah. So virtual best man. Yeah, that's no fun. Yeah.
So we are sailing hard. I mean, you know, it's a big charter boat, so it's not fast. And so we're flying a spinnaker, which is like a giant kite you fly out in front. And so we're flying at night, flying at, you know, when we shouldn't have been. And a storm came up behind us, and so we're sailing along. The storm comes up. I'm on watch. It's like 2 a.m. Run down and grab the captain. I'm like, I don't know what to do here, man. I also don't know how to sail.
Okay. So this whole time, I'm thinking you're like a sailing extraordinaire. Like,
I can't even tie a knot, man.
Yeah.
Where's the throttle?
Yeah. So I don't know how to sail, right? So I'm the unskilled labor on the trip, which if you're going to do that, is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, not.
Did you? I'm sure you learned a ton, though. Right?
I did. So we're sailing along. The storm comes up behind us. It starts raining. And you guys have seen the intro to Gilligan's Island where it's like light from the top, rain's coming in sideways. That's exactly what it looks like when you're in a storm in the middle of the Atlantic and you tear your sail. And so this sail tears, falls down. And so, you know, big waves, storm, raining, sideways rain, light coming down from the top, running down, grabbing the other guys. We're trying not to get swept overboard, pulling this sail in. It ended up being a wild experience, but...
Were you freaked out a little bit, or?
It was a little nerve-wracking, for sure.
Some cortisol level spiking. Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sitting here getting anxious,
I'm
and we're
sweating.
We're very comfortably inside of our studio.
Did you grab your buddy and say, "Go get the bag of Quaaludes"? I'm not dying. Get the loons.
A total Wolf of Wall Street moment.
So when you tear a sail, I mean, do you carry extra sails when you're on a trip like that?
So this was a, you know. It wasn't our mainsail. It wasn't our, you know. So this was a spinnaker, right? So it's a big kite you fly out in front.
So that's what broke.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so fortunately, it didn't fall in the water, which could have flipped the boat. It fell onto its own rope, and so, you know, we were able to pull it back in or whatever. But so I texted my brother that night, and I was like, "Hey, man, I'm not making the wedding."
How are you texting him?
Yeah, I had a Garmin inReach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we go on, and somehow we caught like an 8-knot current off Brazil. And so we ended up making it all the way up. And so we sailed into the back of Hurricane Isaias, I think. It hit mm-hmm. here, right?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, yeah.
So I sailed into the back of that, trying to get to my brother's wedding. We get to St. Vincent. We, you know, finagled our way onto the island. You know, 2 days later, flew to Miami. When I left Miami, Hurricane Isaias hit Miami 2 hours after. Landed in Raleigh, drove to Wilmington, got my house ready for the hurricane. Isaias rolled over, went back to Raleigh, flew to Colorado, and made it to my brother's wedding with like 36 hours to spare.
Dude, you made it. So you made it from South Africa to Colorado without an airplane during quarantine and the very start of the pandemic in 5 months. Give or take.
I'm just thinking about, you know, in The Hangover when they're like driving down the freeway and like the tuxedo guys are like, yeah. That's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, just like
across the whole country and then across the whole ocean.
That's insane, man. That's absolutely insane. Well, I want to go back to something you said. You said you're a historian and St. Helena was somewhere that you really wanted to be. Why was that? What was the... Yeah,
so, you know, it was a big, you know, the Dutch owned Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
And the British had St. Helena, and then they had Durban, you know, over on the east side of South Africa. So, you know, just from that part is pretty interesting. But that was also where Napoleon was exiled for the second time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, I mean, it was really cool being there because every little drainage down into the ocean where you could, you know, possibly put a boat and put people on shore had its own, you know, wall, own, you know, defense building. So the whole island, I mean, it's basically a fortress. And it's incredible. It's huge. I mean, 1,000 feet tall cliffs right into the water. It's beautiful.
Is this, what was the movie that was from back in the 80s?
Oh, here we go.
Papillon?
With Els, right?
Steve McQueen, wasn't it?
It had to do with like some dude that got exiled and it was an island prison. It's a true story and the dude ended up actually escaping. But then they remade it with the Malik Rami a couple
He's
years
good,
ago.
Man. He's really a good actor.
Anyways, it just reminded me of that. So I didn't know if it was...
So Napoleon died on St. Helena. He was exiled to somewhere in the Med the first time. Maybe not Elba. Anyway, can't remember. But then he got, you know, escaped and then...
No, I don't know this.
Okay, so he re-raised his army and basically took France back. Or took his empire back for a little while.
You know that?
We'll do it.
Do you want me to sing Waterloo to you?
Waterloo is a water park in Southern California.
Do you want me to sing Waterloo to you?
Excuse me. Just before we move on, so this is a Papillon. It's a goofy-looking dog.
It's also a banger of a movie starring Steve McQueen.
Yeah. I saw the one. There's one in 2017. That must have been the remake with Rami.
Yeah. Then,
okay. All right. Anyways, continue on, please, Sam. Where were we?
I think I was done.
Well, we went from Durban to Colorado.
Durban to Colorado. So did you... Obviously, that whole journey is a story in and of itself. You went out to do some very specific things, like to dive, and did you get to do enough of that to where you felt fulfilled from this?
You know, I didn't really have any plans, right? It was an adventure. I'd hope to dive more. So the owner of the boat wanted to start running charters, mm-hmm. And so we needed to get it there a little faster than we had hoped. You know, prior to the 3-month lockdown, we had planned to kind of take our time, you know, spend like a week or two in St. Helena and, you know, just dive along the way. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, we only dove a couple times. We dove with, they were either, I think, false killer whales in like 16,000 feet of water, which is, you know, it looks the same as 200 feet of water.
Please tell me you got some video or photos.
I do have some photos, yeah. You know, it looks the same as 200 feet of water, but 16,000 feet mentally feels very different.
Really?
You know, it's like, you know. That's long.
That's terrifying.
That's a lot wide under the bridge.
Yeah, and that was like right over the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, you know, the continental plate that runs up the Atlantic.
So it sounds to me like the captain who'd only made one other transatlantic voyage did a pretty good job, things being considered.
And you said he was 27?
Incredible. Like he, I think the first time.
That takes some
huevos. He, I'm probably going to get some details wrong here, but he was like 17 or 19? I think 19 maybe. When he became the captain of his first sailboat, and he sailed all over the east side of Cape Town over to Madagascar, east side of South Africa, over to Madagascar, spent a few weeks there, came back around to South Africa, and then across, and spent like 9 months, I think,
mm-hmm.
just having a great time exploring. And so that was his first trip. And then this was his second one. He's been a charter captain in the Caribbean between those two.
That's super cool. And have you kept in touch with him?
Yep. Yeah, they actually moved to Charleston, South Carolina.
Really?
Yep.
But he was born and raised in South Africa?
He was. His girlfriend, Hallie, is from Hickory.
Okay.
North Carolina. And that's sort of, you know, how I ran into them.
Instagram? Is this another Instagram story or?
No, no. They met.
How did him and his girlfriend hook up? Her being from Hickory.
Her and her family were on a charter on his boat.
In the Caribbean?
Mm-hmm. And dude. So
he Captain Ron'd it.
Dude, the world the world is getting tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter.
He'd been at sea for 9 months, right? I hadn't seen a girl. And so
he had some sea goggles.
Yep.
I smell progesterone.
And so they did a charter. They ended up having a little fling on the charter. And
nice.
That's how they met.
That's how every great story.
I'd say it was like slow motion and Dreamweaver was playing in the background as she walked onto the boat and her hair was glistening.
Wait, but her parents were on the boat too?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Liberal parents, man. Whatever. Yeah,
amen.
Just like, hey.
Amen.
Have at it, honey. We support you dating this.
No one knew.
Very discreet. Very discreet. Faux pas. What did you learn from all this experience? Any lessons along the journey?
Sailing on a private boat's much more enjoyable than a Mew.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I learned how to sail. Like, it was great. You know, I found, you know, there's a lot of peace, right? Like, there was no responsibilities. It was just, you know, daily watches, you know. Did a lot of stretching and working out and, like, really kind of got my body back to where I wanted it to be, which was big, right? So, like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, a lot of guys, bad back, bad knees,
heck
everything.
Yeah.
You know, losing some weight, stretching, being flexible helps a lot.
Did you journal while you were doing this?
I did, yeah.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, because I've always wanted to get into that, but I feel like doing, like, my day-to-day is if I journaled my routine, it would be boring.
Yeah.
But something like that, like, I would want to write that out. When have you gone back and read it yet?
Yeah, a couple times. I probably should have done that before coming today.
No. Stories, yeah.
yeah, it's cool, man. I've never kept a journal before. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I had so much. Like, so many cool experiences through life I wish I had documented. Because, you know, now I just remember, like, little highlights or, like, if I took some pictures or whatever.
Yeah. Do you think you'll put it into narrative form, maybe write about it? I think that's an incredible story.
You know, I hadn't thought about it. I probably should. You know, I shared all my pictures from it, you know, because I would kind of chronologically being stuck in the house. Right? Mm-hmm. We had monkeys coming through every day and, you know, all sorts of cool stuff that you never see in the States. So, you know, maybe I probably should do that.
From my perspective, I mean, one of the things we talk about regularly on Signal Fire, and it sounds like you sort of did this, but a little bit later. So you got in the Marines, you said, in 2010?
Yeah.
So out in 14, and then you sold your business in what, 19?
Last year.
Last year. Okay, so this all happened in 2020 over the course of... So we talk about it a lot, like getting out of the military. At some point, it might not be the day that you exit. It could be a little while down the road. But to do exactly that, like take a spirit journey. Mm-hmm. Do the walkabout. Take some time to just chill and relax. Was that for you mentally? Was like that this trip was that?
I kind of did that before... I guess as I started frontline, because like the first year I was just teaching. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'd be like, I want to go to Costa Rica. So I went to Costa Rica and taught for a few months. You know, I taught a class at the base of the Tetons in Wyoming, which was incredible. I mean, popping up, you know, you've got Tetons right in front of you, Grand Tetons a couple over. That was a really neat experience. And then, you know, a lot of the winters, right, it was slow here. So I would do some trips here and there.
Yeah.
I kind of like to stay mentally. You know, take those trips for your mental health. You know?
Yeah.
Dude, ask him what... Actually, I can ask.
Okay, yeah, you had. Don't tell me to ask.
Dude, share the story about, like, the impetus of, like, your... Because you were almost, like, obsessed with just holding your breath as a kid, right?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Yeah, so how I got into freediving. I read a book when I was 12, like, coffee table book, called Blue Water Hunting and Freediving by Terry Moss. I'm so glad I read that book, and that's why I got into it instead of getting into it beforehand. A huge part of that book was about safety. Mm-hmm. And so fortunately, I learned, you know, not to hold my breath by myself in the pool, which will kill you. And so if you black out, right? So I would sit on the couch at 12 years old and hold my breath till I'd pass out. But you know, at least I wasn't doing it in the water.
You are a perfect candidate for the United States Marine
Sam
Corps.
Sam takes a lot of naps.
Oh, I love it. We're going to have to take a really quick break. But when we come back, so you're a historian and your family history is like unbelievable. Just I'll give it a little tease. Your great-great-grandfather?
You know, I've never actually mapped it out, but somewhere back there.
Somewhere back there, one of your grandfathers, however many degrees back, signed the Declaration of the Independence, and you've got a whole family history.
Did I catch a the in there?
It's an extra the.
What did I say?
Declaration of the Independence.
Did I say the Declaration of the Independence? Yeah, hell yeah, man. It's the Independence. Declaration of Independence, and then you've got a lot of other people who made a huge impact on American United States history. So when we come back, one of the things I said I want to talk about, because I've been thinking about it a lot, is like the importance of leaving a legacy. And so we'll talk about that with Sam Blunt, our guest. Don't go anywhere. Be right back on Signal Fire Radio.
At the VBC, we believe there are three things that a veteran stands to lose when they leave active duty, which can contribute to increased struggles and stress once they enter the civilian sector. The first is a sense of purpose that they have while they're serving their country. The VBC can provide this by allowing them to serve each other in a new capacity again. The second is a sense of belonging to a community who understands and accepts you for who you are, regardless of where you come from, what your quirks are, how strange or weird you might be, what kind of jokes you might tell. Everybody laughs and accepts you for who you are, and they're even willing to die for you. It's a little different when you enter the civilian workplace. By participating in the Veteran Business Collective, you have the opportunity once a month to get together with like-minded people who will accept you, and you can regain that sense of camaraderie that you had in the military. The third thing is economic stability and success. When you're in the military, the paychecks come in every 2 weeks, you're provided housing, and health insurance is taken care of. When you leave service, you have to source all those on your own. And it can be a quite challenging undertaking for someone who's never had to do so in the civilian workplace. The Veteran Business Collective helps with that by providing referral business, networking opportunities, education and training, mentorship, and a host of other resources to help veterans and their families succeed economically.
Signal Fire Radio.
Welcome back to Signal Fire Radio. Got a great conversation with our guest, Sam Blunt, going. Evan, Matthew, I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
Because it keeps me up at night. I don't know if it does the same with you, but legacy, the feeling and importance of leaving a legacy, and ultimately how you will be remembered after you are gone has been very important to me as of late. I don't know why, probably because I'm a dad now, and I think that changes things, and my parents are getting older, and so like all these things are coming together, and I've been thinking about it. Have you guys given thought to that? Is that something that's on your radar? Are you doing different things? You say yes, Evan?
Yeah, for sure.
It's on mine too.
How so, Ev? We'll start with you.
You know, it's exactly what you said. It's about your legacy. It's about what you leave behind. And I think maybe some of that is you thinking about, like, you know, like Arlen just had surgery,
mm-hmm.
and sort of that brush with mortality. Like, you never know what could happen. You never know what could go wrong. We kind of have to think about that in our own lives
too. I didn't think that we were going to make it back to my house last night.
And that's why I wear this bracelet, you know. It's a cross and a skull because it's memento mori, you know. Like,
yeah.
Death is always there. You're closer to death than you are to being born at any point in your life. You never know when it's going to happen, but that doesn't mean you should be afraid of it.
You put our sweet Matthew in the hands of potential death last night, didn't you?
I didn't. We were under control.
We were under control.
The man has ice in his veins, all right? But... to your point, no, I think that leaving a legacy is one of the most important things that we can do, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be some like prolific.
Where do you think it starts? Because that's the question I've been asking myself right now.
I think it's leaving the world better than you found it. Mm-hmm. You know, because people aren't going to remember Rob Renz's corpse. They're going to remember what he left behind.
Yeah,
you know, you can leave behind a gorgeous golden-haired corpse, but mm-hmm. people are going to remember your legacy. They're going to remember your name and what it stood for and the things that your contributions to the world.
Yeah. I feel like what's been not worrying me, but what I've been mulling over is like, at what age does it begin? You know, so like right now I've been super focused on building a personal brand and a reputation. And I feel like more and more, the more I think about it, like reputation turns into legacy. So like a well-established reputation applied daily over time, at some point you're going to be dead and that's your legacy.
Yeah, that's when you hit the off switch, that's when it turns into your legacy.
Yeah, because I also believe that all the choices you make in your 20s will determine what your 30s are going to be like, and then likewise 30s for 40s, 40s for 50s. Like, these decades sort of build on each other.
But I don't think they define you.
No, they don't. And that's the question I was going to ask you. Is it ever too late to start defining your reputation or sort of setting your vision on what your legacy is going to be?
I don't think people's cores change, mm-hmm. right? Like, you are who you are. You can add to it. You can take away from it. But, like, if you're just a dirt bag, you're probably going to stay that way.
Dirt bag for life.
You're not going to want to do the work to change. But
yeah.
I think that it's not too late to start something. We started a podcast when we were 30. Yeah. Well, I was 30. You guys are old as hell. you know, it's not too late to try new things. You're on Instagram like a 13-year-old Ryan Miles.
Man, I'm doing TikToks, baby.
I know.
Yeah, so all herky-jerky weird dances.
I think it's you know, it's about being open-minded and being growth-minded.
What do you think, Matt, as the elder statesman of Signal Fire?
I mean, me personally, it's something I think about, and it starts off with the legacy that I leave just as a dad and as a husband.
Yeah, that's the most important one. Like, what will Ryan and Reagan, what will Liv and Maddie, what will Junior and Lou say about Sam? Do you have kids?
No,
not yet. Okay, all right. No. Eventually, we'll throw your kids in the mix. But like, what will they say about you? How will they remember you? That's I think that's priority one.
Yeah, and I heard it explained, or I heard a story once, and I think it was at a funeral, but. You know, your legacy, part of it's like kind of defined by, like, if you have a funeral, who's in attendance to that funeral? Like, Michael Mike passed away, you know, the start of the summer, and his legacy was profound because of the role that he played within the Catholic Church back in Orange County. But at his funeral, I mean, the church was packed with like 1,500 people or something. I mean, it was epic. And that, I think that is a testament to, you know, what legacy are you leaving behind?
Right.
So yeah, it's something that is on my mind, and I'm, you know, I try to use it to like impact positive changes that I make in my life for that very reason, for that vision.
Sam, you've had a few brushes with death over the past 8 or 9 months, it seems like. What's your take on it?
You know, I don't really care if people remember me per se. I just don't, never felt that, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like what you were saying, leaving the world better than you found it, right? So, like, I don't care that much, but I want to leave things better, right? Mm-hmm. So whether it's through, like, social impact or, you know, environmental, whatever you're doing, as long as it's, you know, leaves a little better than you found it.
Yeah. Selling dope software.
Dope software. Couple of sassy guys. So you do have you're a historian, and you've got a very deep family history. Tell our listeners a little bit about that, and we'll sort of tie that all into this legacy conversation.
All right. So William Blount, who signed the Declaration of Independence.
Not to be confused with William Blount, who's a totally different person.
Yeah, correct.
Old Bill Blount.
But, right, so we're talking about legacy. So what you haven't heard about William Blount is that he was also the first politician to be impeached in our history.
Really? Do you know what for?
Yeah.
What was it for?
So I love this.
Are we going to get canceled because of this? Or
I hope it was
somebody 300 years
ago. So I'm going to start with, remember, times were different.
Yeah.
And so he was, I'm not sure if it was governor or whatever they called it, of the Tennessee Territory. And he was having an issue with the local tribes, and, you know, where they were attacking and everything. So he, you know, this is before Louisiana Purchase. So
we're talking Native Americans.
Yes. And so he told the U.S. Army, U.S. Army, that the French were attacking. And so they came down. Obviously, the Native Americans attacked the army, and then they, you know, took care of the Native American problem. And oh my
God. Controversial.
And told a little white lie there, huh?
And
General Milley. We call that one the old Milley 1-2.
The Milley 2-step.
Yeah.
And I believe he also may have been selling arms to the Native Americans in Florida, who were, you know, fighting the Spanish. And I'm not sure how that tied in, but
dude, it was like OG Iran.
Sandinistas and Nicaragua. Yes.
The Fast and Furious of the 1760s.
Itself, doesn't it?
Jeez. Yeah.
But you know, like you're saying, right? You know, as long as you do some good in there, that's usually what you'll be remembered for. So yeah.
That's crazy. So when did he get impeached then?
I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. But that had to have happened before the Constitution was signed in 1787, right?
I'm not exactly.
Okay,
sure.
All right. We'll piece together the timeline. All right, sorry.
It was after, I imagine, the signing.
Okay. Yeah, they were keeping some dirt on William Blount for a little while there. Just
you can't say France is attacking when France isn't attacking.
And thus started.
It's like saying bomb on an
airplane.
And
thus started the War of 1812. No, sorry. All right, continue with the story of William Blount.
That's most of what worth sharing. You know, came down a couple of generations. My granddad, he was a B-52 pilot during World War II. He ended up just training.
This is your dad's dad?
Dad's dad, yeah. So he got out and went to Atlanta and bought 4 Army surplus bulldozers and started digging ponds in Eufaula, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And so that business ended up growing, and he ended up growing into a pretty big construction company. And you know, he ended up building the Superdome in New Orleans, the university in Saudi Arabia, some cool stuff like that.
So nonchalant about building and the freaking Superdome.
The Superdome.
Yeah. Yeah, but then like talking about legacy, right? So he was from, or they lived in Montgomery, Alabama. And I'm not sure if you knew Martin Luther King, but he got together with several hundred business owners in Alabama. And you know, they all signed a declaration about you know, equal rights and everything. And so, you know, for quite a while, my dad, all his siblings, they had a walk around at night with shotguns because they were, you know, the KKK was threatening on burning crosses in the yard and stuff. So
this was still in Tennessee.
This was in Alabama.
Yeah. Are you from Montgomery?
From Birmingham.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, they did that, and so he was a big supporter of the civil rights movement. And then, you know, later on in life, ended up selling his company, and he took that money and he built this huge cultural park called the Alabama Shakespeare Festival down there. Big museum. There's a big Shakespeare stage kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a couple hundred acres, I think. And it's this huge cultural park that's there for free for everyone to go to. So it's pretty cool, right? It's always full of school buses and kids going there, and that's sort of, to me, his legacy is he left Alabama way better than he found it. Mm-hmm. So.
Did now you said you earlier in the first segment you said you went to school, hated it, dropped out. Were you going to school in Alabama?
No, that was UNCW.
Oh, UNCW.
Yep.
Oh, so that's what brought you here to Wilmington.
Yeah. So when I got out, I was trying to find a place with good spearfishing, a school I could get into, and not Florida.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty much here at Charleston.
Why not Florida?
I don't like Florida.
Because William Blunt was selling arms to the Indians in Florida to fight the Spanish. Seminoles, Vasco da Gama had to get him out of there.
Seminoles. I don't like traffic and people that much. So it's just too crowded down there. I lived down in Key Largo for a little bit as a kid, so I knew I didn't want to live there.
Holding your breath on the couch at Key Largo, yep. Making yourself pass out.
I wasn't getting into school in Charleston, so I ended up here.
I love it, man. And you've just decided to stay? Like, this is home now? When you're not going to Costa Rica or South Africa?
Yep.
Or...
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
It's the first place I've ever lived that I wasn't ready to go in a year, so.
Yeah. So what's next for you, then?
Living-wise? Or...
No. I mean, just in general. Like, you've got all these great life stories. You've got an amazing history. You know, it seems to me that you're very conscious about not necessarily how you want to be remembered, but what impact you have on the world each and every day. So, like, what's the next big idea for Sam?
Right now I'm going through a career change, right? Went from, having a freedive spearfishing shop, being an instructor, I was decent at, and total career change into software sales. And so, it's incredible. Like, I'm super excited. I'm learning constantly. And, I don't know anything relatively to where, I was. And so it's been cool not being an expert and having to, really start at the bottom and grow from there.
Do you find that, has that always been a part of you? Because you said you had no idea how to sail. You're going across the Atlantic. You're on watch in the middle of the night when everybody else is asleep. So you have no idea what you're doing. you started a business when you probably had, coming directly out of the Marine Corps, probably had little experience knowing how to actually run a business.
No idea.
And now getting into an industry that you have, does that go all the way back to holding your breath on the couch? Or did that like desire to just try new things and not be worried about the consequences or the result of it? Did that happen later on in life?
I'd say I grew into it a bit. Like, there's definitely parts of that in my childhood. I get bored easily, right? So, like, I'd get into a hobby, super into it, get above average, and then I'd probably move on to the next one. So that's sort of always been a trend. And then I like the excitement, right? Like, I get bored after a few years of doing something. I'm ready for a change.
Yeah. And is that what brought on the bird photography?
So that was just being stuck in a house in South Africa for 3 months. When we pulled into Cape Town, I found a photography shop that had a bird lens. Because I noticed on that first leg of the trip, we had all these birds just flying right behind us the whole time. So that's kind of how I got into the bird photography.
Right.
And I got into underwater photography because of Frontline. I started doing that for marketing purposes. Ended up loving it, and ended up being the best thing for my business because it's such a social media driven
mm-hmm.
thing. So I was able to create my own content instead of just hoping people would share stuff with me.
Yeah.
So really got into photography because of that, and then I kind of found a you know, it's like hunting or snowboarding or hiking, whatever it is, just getting out in nature and just, you know, being out there is what I like. So
hold that thought. We're going to talk a little bit more of that, about that on the end of the on the other end of this break. Don't go anywhere. We're going to finish our conversation with Sam Blunt here on Signal Fire Radio.
The explosion hit. I lost consciousness. There was another soldier. He was directly under the blast. And when I was doing my check for casualties, that's when I found him. I hadn't had to see anything like that up until that point. And that is the one thing that I see on a regular basis is this kid. He was 19 years old. My name is James Rodriguez. I'm a veteran from Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I support the Compassionate Care Act, Senate Bill 711. One deployment story completely changes a veteran. They don't feel like they have any other options a lot of times, and when they feel like they're alone, they have no reason to go on. The VA had me on 12 different medications, and that's exactly what I used to attempt suicide. Medical cannabis has been able to treat so many different symptoms of my PTSD. Everyone has different symptoms and different ailments. North Carolina as a whole can benefit from medical cannabis.
Visit ncfamiliesformedicalcannabis.com for more information.
Signal Fire Radio.
Welcome back to Signal Fire Radio, having a really, really fun conversation with our guest, Sam Blunt. And Sam, you got into photography. Have you had no passion for this? Well, no, you just decided to pick it up and start clicking pictures, right?
Yep.
Just as a way to, are you familiar with Picturegate, of the Matt Mylott Picturegate?
I'm not.
Okay. Devin, do you want to?
No, Matt needs to tell us. Matt, share your story.
Yeah, share your story.
So I served in Iraq for the invasion in 03.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your kind words. And every year on 9/11, God bless my family, and it's just my immediate family. It's my mom and my sister. They post this picture.
It gets a lot of shares though from the.
That's the part that makes me so nervous. Is there's people that I don't know that my mom or my sister knows that are like, oh God bless, and I'm like, who is this? Anyways.
Yeah.
I have no idea who this picture is. It's a picture of a Marine, like, in, you know, with a Kevlar on and
pre-Marpat, too.
Like chocolate chip candy.
Yeah.
No, that's not chocolate chip. That's Tricolors.
Ooh.
Chocolate chip was Desert Storm. That was like you Ron. Were there, that was so Ron.
Yeah. Arnold Schwarzkopf.
I was 11 during Desert Storm.
Yeah.
Ass.
Norman Schwarzkopf. That was the. Yeah. Okay. Storm I said Arnold. I combined Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Copper.
That would be a funny character.
But every year they post this on social media, and it's a picture of a troop holding like his rifle, an Iraqi flag, and then an Iraqi like shaking his hand and like kissing him on the cheek. It's not me. I don't know who the hell it is.
Stolen valor.
And you're out there. Let us know who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's and I've told my mom this. I'm like, Mom, I don't know who that is. It's not me. It's definitely not me. And that's the best part. The dude looks like he's five.
I'm gonna pull it up. I'm gonna pull it up.
It's not me at all.
And we'll share it.
Are you sure it's not you? Because you black things out.
Yeah,
are you sure it's not you.
I'm positive it's not. It's very obviously, and he's carrying like an M16.
Fair question.
None of that was. That's me.
It's a very fair question because some of the details could line up. The face is obscured for sure.
Did you not carry an M16A2 when you invaded Iraq?
Yeah, of course you carried an M16A2.
No. Huh.
What were you? What was your service weapon?
All
right, here you go. Here you go.
Whatever.
Sam, here's the photo.
Carries.
And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, we'll flash it up.
Can you tell that that's not me by looking at that picture?
Can you tell that that's not him, or can you tell that it is him? Right?
Kind of looks like you.
Yeah.
Getting a little love from the locals.
Yeah. Square jaw.
Looks like you.
Square jaw, button nose. It could very well be you, Matt.
No, and
the cheeks.
Like all
the
of this
cheeks,
is
yeah.
not me. Totally not me. And not to mention the NVG mount. Mm-hmm. I would not have that mount on my Kevlar unless I was using night vision.
Why? Oh, unless you because
it's daytime.
It's daytime.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah,
And I would always wear the head net. Mm-hmm. So like I would actually wear mount it to my head underneath my helmet.
And you are 1,000% certain that this isn't you.
That is not me.
You are 100% sure. So it's brilliant, Sam, because so September of 2020, I think, was the first time that we got notified of Picturegate.
Yeah.
And it was all reconfirmed September of 2021 because like clockwork. Yeah, like clockwork. I start seeing posts of Matt's family putting up this picture, and of course I screen grab it, and I send it to Matt, and I'm like, it's back. It's made its way back into
the content and the context change, but the picture is the same. That's a framed picture in your parents' house.
It has to be.
No, it's not. No. It's in a...
Where does the picture sit? Yeah.
It's in a scrapbook that my mom made just for my Iraq deployment. Yeah,
when is
scrapbook my mom made? Exactly.
When is the next time your mom is coming to visit? Because I wanted to bring the scrapbook,
I want
all of us to be together.
She'll be here this fall. Like
we're
going to
turn the cameras on, and it's going to be.
Dude, we've never had a parent on. That would be.
We're not.
My mom would be a blast too.
Yeah,
on the show. Yeah.
Can we have Robbie Renz?
We no.
Please
no.
Come on.
Who?
My mom.
Mommy.
I'd make her sit there and you could sit outside.
No, because I feel like our moms are very similar.
Yeah,
as far as their personality and like how fun they are and they can throw down. And,
yeah. I don't know that mom would want to do it. Dad would sit here and talk about nothing for hours on end. Yeah.
But he wouldn't be able to sit down because he'd be like this.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd do the Colonel stand the entire time. Do you guys find that you mimic behaviors of one parent over another?
No.
I love my dad, but so many things that my dad does, I have found myself doing.
Like what?
Just like...
and I will validate,
like the way
I'll
he
validate
sits,
this.
The way, if he walks into the living room and sits down at the couch, like, I'll watch him, I'm like, I sit that same freaking way.
I called Matt Dillon Jr. one time, and
he lost it. Yeah, I remember that was on a text, and he got super mad
about it.
Didn't
talk to me for 2 days.
I think it had to do with the context of what was going on.
It's because you thought
I
looked
my
old
dad
in a picture.
Well, no, there was a very horrible picture that you took of me.
That's one of my favorite pictures
ever,
though.
You were shooting the bird on camera, and you looked haggard, man.
I did.
Your knuckles looked like Robin Williams. It was... It was a bad picture.
Can
it was,
I tell
it
you?
It was unflattering.
Can I tell you something that you and you and Dillon both do? I've told you this at your house.
Go ahead.
It makes me wildly uncomfortable. Evan, they come and stand behind you.
No, I do that intentionally.
I know you do it now, but Dillon does it unintentionally, and so I do not like it. I do not like it if I'm sitting.
It doesn't
help
that Dillon's 4.
I know.
4'11"
and a little leprechaun. Yeah, I do not like it if I'm sitting there and somebody comes and stands behind me. Like, it is the most infuriating, nerve-wracking. My anxiety level goes to a million, and Matt kept doing it.
And what makes it even better is I'll touch him.
Yeah,
he's like, stop it,
even now,
dude.
Just talking about it is giving me agita. But then Dillon, on cue, comes over and starts standing behind me doing, hey, hippie, hey, what's up, hippie? Standing right behind me and, like, putting his hand on my shoulders. I'm like, I'm going to lose it.
Old Dilly Dilly's supposed to be swinging by here.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll give him 5 minutes on the microphone for sure. For sure. Well, you just asked if we could have a parent on. Perfect. Perfect.
Anyways. Back to our guest.
Moving right on. But yeah, so I asked the question, do you mimic anything that your parents do? Because I'm finding that I stand like my dad. My dad always stands like this with his hands like on the small of his back and his elbows splayed out.
And he looks like a good Marine Corps officer every single day.
Yeah. He's also
well-shaven,
very square
tucked
jaw.
In collared shirt. Yeah. Wore jeans out to Mason's Inlet one day. God bless. Had a polo shirt on, a belt, jeans. And
shoes.
He's standing in the water.
No,
in
white
jeans.
New Balances. Full
dad.
Full
Steve Jobs.
He goes full dad. Yeah, he goes full dad. Are you sliding further and further towards one parent, Sam?
You know, my mannerisms. There's a picture of me when I was like 5, and I have the exact same mannerisms I do now. I'm like playing with my fingernail, standing with one leg crossed over,
holding your breath till you pass out.
Yeah, right. No, but I'll notice. I'll try to notice next time I'm with them.
Yeah,
see if I am.
How long can you hold your breath for?
A little over 5 minutes.
5 minutes. So we've got about 5 minutes left on this show.
That would be very boring.
That would be.
Well, the three of us will talk while Sam's just sitting there holding his breath.
Yep. Did you still hold it?
Did you, and obviously you have to build up to that.
Yeah.
So let's say, like, because we went out on the boat yesterday. It was cathartic as crap. And I've been on Matt about wanting to spearfish and wanting to learn to free dive and all that stuff. For a noob, total beginner, like, what are you coaching them to do if they wanted to get into?
Yeah, so I'm going to preface this with, learn the safety part first.
Read the book.
Yeah. Preferably take a class from a good instructor. One that is notoriously tough.
And I will say that at least in like the southeastern U.S., like the people that I've known in the diving community from Virginia down to Florida, Frontline has been known for being very, very safety oriented.
Yeah.
And I mean, some very seasoned free divers.
There's certain places where you want sticklers.
Yeah.
So like, the shooting range and the free diving. Yep. Like, I want a stickler. I don't want like some loosey goosey.
Well, yeah, man. No, we're just gonna jump in the water and you're gonna be good, man. Yeah.
Well, when I first met Sam, you had just come out with the bleed kit or the trauma kit, which you've seen it, right? The little orange
negative
dry bag. Anyway,
I have no reference for what you're saying.
I take it everywhere on my boat, and I always take it when I'm diving. But it has a full bleed kit of just.
See, you're not a very good instructor when it comes to being out on the boat or out on the water. You gave zero prep about anything at all whatsoever.
That was completely intentional. I was like, why are we? Doing
I was
this
like,
story?
I was
Rob's
there,
like,
I was
let's get in the water. I'm like, fine, okay.
It was like swimming through milk.
I couldn't see your hand a foot in front of you. All right, so anyways, safety first.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So this, you know, the sport, if you black out and you're alone, you're going to die pretty much. Like, I know of like two that didn't. But if you have a buddy, you have a 100% survival rate. So that's a big thing, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but like when I got out, I struggled to make good friends. Mm. And so I kind of fell more in love with freediving because it's the one thing I've found since leaving the military where you rely on someone to save your life.
100%. Yeah, you got a battle buddy.
You know, I'm not going to say it's like the same depth of friendship you have with the guys that you know, miserable with for 4 years, but it's pretty damn close. So anyway, after the safety stuff, you know, in 2 days during my class, most people had a 3-minute breath hold and would dive to 66 feet.
66.
Feet.
That's far.
Yep. I don't think I've been deeper than like 16 or 17 feet in a pool.
Yeah. Well, a lot of technique.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Well, so what are some of those, like if I'm going to DIY it, if I'm going to sit on the couch, like what are some things that I can do without being in the pool or being, you know, in the ocean with you?
You know, 66. The way we breathe, we call it ventilations, but you take a quick breath into your diaphragm. So you're not breathing into your chest like most of us breathe. If you guys have ever seen like a child breathe, right? Breathing. Their stomach. Mm-hmm. That's how we're supposed to breathe.
Yeah.
Social pressures, right? Nobody wants to run around sticking their gut out.
I do. I'm a power lifter. Excellent. I'm belly breath. Belly breath all day, baby.
Yeah. So
Jenna does that because she was a singer. So I guess that's probably the same technique where you breathe. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so when we inhale, our heart rate increases and we exhale, it decreases. So you do a quick inhale into your diaphragm and a real slow, like 8-10 second exhale. And so that'll start dropping your heart rate. You know, after a minute or two of that, take a big breath and just hold your breath. Go as long as you can. Feel some contractions. And then do it several more times. As you hold your breath, your dive reflex will kick in. Your heart rate will continue to drop. And you'll end up holding your breath longer.
What is the dive reflex?
So we think it's, you know, a hangover from back when, you know, through evolution, right? You know, we evolved out of the water. And so it's the same exact thing that happens to seals, whales, dolphins. Our blood shunts to our core. So like if you guys are ever in the pool and you notice you like want to pee a lot, that's because your blood is pulled to your core. Your kidneys think there's too much fluid and they're trying to flush. Mm. Your heart rate drops significantly. So a combo of those things is what happens to, ocean mammals when they do a dive. Same exact thing.
So there's an extreme amount of like physiology and anatomy and body science that goes into all of this too as well. Mm-hmm. So you just don't want to jump in the water, go down, and come back up. You could really permanently injure yourself.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
worse.
It's a good idea to get instruction. You know, as long as you're diving safe with a buddy and you guys take the time to like learn the rescues and practice them. I mean, you don't have to take a class.
Yeah,
but it's going to take that learning curve from being very long to you ramp up really
coaching,
quick.
Coaching. In something like that is, I feel like,
non-negotiable. Yeah, non-negotiable. It's not like, hey, I want to learn to play golf. You know, you can go out there by yourself.
Yeah, you can get on YouTube,
The only thing in the world you don't want to do on the golf course is be out there in a lightning storm holding up, a 9-iron.
Yeah.
That's really about the only safety brief that you need for around of golf. Yeah. Although I did hit a human being. I haven't hit a hole in one. I've been playing golf.
You've hit a human being.
Hit a human being. Tim Horst. Tim Horst. I haven't told you this story?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Totally off topic from freediving. I went golfing with Tim Horst and a couple other people, Sean McDonald and a few other people from VBC. And we go play Castle Bay. I par the first hole. I'm feeling really good about myself.
No, we didn't ask about that.
I'm leading up to hitting the human. Hole two, I bomb my drive, middle of the fairway. Tim's feeling really good about himself. He's like, okay, I'm playing with a decent golfer. I don't have to worry too much. I'm about 5 feet behind him and 10 feet to the left of him addressing my second ball. I swing club choice. I think it was a 7-iron. I think I was like 160 out.
Okay.
And yeah, accessible flag
no
location.
Three-wood?
Not from 170.
No, I know.
Yeah, so I blade it right off the toe of the club. Tim is sitting in the golf cart and this thing is on a beater and it tags him
in
the calf, man. 100%. 100% tags him in the calf. Tim, he's a Marine veteran too, but helicopter pilot type, gets out and starts like kind of walking it off. He had a purple dimple imprinted golf ball right on his calf. I felt kind of bad about
it. Did you swing 100, like full swing?
Oh, yeah. Full swing.
And
full
you just
swing.
Sculled the ball. It was just a line drive right
But see, here's the thing, and we could probably end with this. I laugh when people get hurt. Am I the only person who does that? Like, if it's not a serious...
Yeah, of course. It's not a serious injury. It's best
when
it's...
if it's serious,
I mean, he didn't drown, so we're good, right?
Dude, I was doubled over in hysterics laughing about it.
I'd have got kicked off, for sure. I'd have been...
Well, with your laugh, when you have your genuine laugh, like, that thing is loud and it carries.
Yeah, they'd have to drag me out of there.
So if Tim's listening, dude, I'm still sorry about hitting you with the golf ball, but it made for a good story here. So, all right, end us with this, Sam. What's the best 60-second travel story, free diving story you can give us? So, not to put you on the spot or anything.
Damn.
You totally put.
I totally put him on the spot. Matt, you have a good one loaded.
What?
A good free diving story that Sam can dissect. And say everything that you did wrong.
Not in 60 seconds.
No.
Oh, he can dissect plenty of things. I can dissect things I do wrong.
Yeah.
Don't panic, Finn.
Don't panic.
If you get entangled, cut.
Get away.
Don't sit there and try to untangle yourself.
Yeah.
And dive with a buddy and be sure they got eyes on you.
Yesterday we used, at my boat, we used our tent cabana thing as our little red flag that we had people in the wall. We were unprepared yesterday.
No, please don't share any of these details.
I'm not going to share anything with Sam. I don't
no
want...
No dive flag.
I don't want
no
his...
No visibility. No idea.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to go swimming. That's all it was.
I mean, it's just snorkeling. Right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said as I was getting in the water. I was like, we're going snorkeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, you know... You can die if you push it too much.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to.
It's not a big deal, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a strong swimmer as it is. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to... paddle around up top here and look at green water. I bumped into Matt. Matt had his little
Matt scraped his little
spear gun. Yeah, it was eventful. Nice. But it was really, really good for the soul. So I can 100% see how that played a huge part in your life and turning you from hardcore Marine machine gunner into the chill travel dude that you are right now, man. So I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, awesome.
Great.
Matt, Evan, any parting words of wisdom to share with our audience today?
We have to have Sam back because there's too much good stuff.
We were talking about on the break. If he brings his journal and kind of writes it out chronologically, that would make a good audiobook to hear like that whole journey over 5 months.
Yeah.
I mean, very Ernest Hemingway.
I mean, given his family's lineage, we should have like breached the subject of like Freemasons and gone like national treasure route.
The Illuminati.
Like, yeah.
Ancient aliens. Totally. No, I think Sam is a testament to like not being scared. You know? He got out and he's done a bunch of stuff that required him to like take a leap.
Yep.
You know, figuratively, literally sailing across the Atlantic, that's terrifying. Starting a business, that's scary. You know, going into software sales, that's hard. It's hard to be an SDR, man. So just, you know, Sam is a testament to that, to not letting your service define you, but also maybe using some of those things to carry forward.
Dude, and I, to that point, I think that's exactly the imprint that you're leaving on the world right now. To whoever listens to this, if it's one people or if it's a million, it doesn't matter. Like, if one person hears the message that there's no prescription, there's, like, no set path that you have to follow, whether that be for military transition or whatever. If you're living through a major transition, go do the things that you want to do and understand that there's risk associated with it, but you got to go live your life, man. So kudos to you for doing that, dude.
Yeah, man. 100%. All
right. Awesome. That's going to do it for this episode of Signal Fire Radio. Until next week, go out and feed your mind, strengthen your body, enrich your spirit, and grow your tribe, and go be a signal fire in your community. We will talk to you.
Catch new episodes weekly and be sure to follow us on social media. Subscribe now and become a signal fire in your community.